Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the TetraCast, RPG Site's weekly podcast. My name is Brian Vitale. Joining me, we have Adam Vitale.
Hello.
James Galizio.
Hey, folks.
Mikhail Mannani.
I'm awake.
And Chow Min Wu.
How's it going?
So welcome back, Mikhail. It's been a few weeks. Thank you for staying up and burning the midnight oil with us. As we said last week, no Josh this week because Josh, as well as other contributors to RPG sites such as Scott White and Hayes Madsen, are at PAX this weekend. So we're recording this after the September State of Play, during PAX, before a pair of Nintendo Directs that were just announced, and then TGS at the end of the month.
Yeah.
So, busy month. And, of course, this month is
hardly enough time to play all the games releasing, which is, oh, man.
Yep. And they're all the games that are releasing are all like, actually, never mind. I'll say they're all super long, but that's not necessarily true. But we'll go into it. So, early in September, there's multiple games we could be talking about, but the big two releases, of course, that I think, did they have the same embargo? Blood of Dawnwalker and Onimusha?
Exact same embargo down to the second.
Damn it. So yeah, those are the big two releases to talk about this week. Both of those games have reviews up on the site. In terms of podcast focus, we're going to lean on the Blood of Dawnwalker this week because, James, you wrote up the review for that for RPG Site up on the site. So you'll lead the discussion there. Hayes did write up our Onimusha review. Hayes is at PAX, so was not able to be on this episode of the podcast. We can still talk about Onimusha because I know James, Mikhail, and Chow have all put a little bit of time into it, at least. We might like introduce it this week and follow through next week. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've wanted to play more, but juggling a couple of other things in the background, so it's like, okay, I can't quite justify playing too much of it yet, especially since I have stuff I'm trying to get done before TGS. I've put about like how many hours does Steam say I have in it? One second. I think it's like six or so hours.
Mm-hmm. While James is looking at that, what happened with Onimusha's embargo is they had a separate review embargo and a separate like technical comparison embargo, which I feel like is them like looking at what I'm doing or whatever. It was just funny. So that was like a few days after the review embargo. And I did not have my comparison there for those because I had some people ask because I was doing the FF Resonance impressions, which we'll talk about. So yeah, they had multiple embargoes.
Yeah, it's interesting to see like, you know, over the years, how embargoes have evolved in terms of most of them got a release date now. If they precede the release date, that's a rarity these days. At least it more so than it used to be, than like a streaming embargo, a guides embargo, technical embargoes. So just depends on the game. And I'm not surprised when certain outlets, you know, mess them up because sometimes they're hard to keep straight. But yeah, we'll start with Blood of Dawnwalker. We'll talk about Onimusha, and then of course, not only do we have everything out of the State of Play this week, but like, it was a busy week even outside of that in terms of like preview opportunities, interviews. Mikhail, I think you've got like four technical features up on the site that we'll at least talk through them, you know, briefly each. So we'll kind of go into it and try to hopefully keep everything straight. And I did try to watch as many of the trailers or gameplay demos or dev dives as I could, but not absolutely everything. So I'll be leaning on the team here to fill in the gaps of things that I'm less aware of and vice versa. But without further ado, we're going to start out with the release, the debut project from Rebel Wolves, The Blood of Dawnwalker, and a game that I've been really excited about, but as everyone else has been too busy to start from its release a few days ago. So James, this was one of your projects over the last, you know, a couple of weeks. I'm not sure exactly how early you were able to get started on it, but you wrote up the review for Blood of Dawnwalker. I know you thought pretty highly of it, but here's your chance to speak to it. So go ahead and take it away.
Yeah. First things first, I actually cheekily want to mention, I've seen some people confused about what the actual name of the game is. It is The Blood of Dawnwalker. You got that correct. Funnily enough, a good way to remember the name is that it's a play on words about it's of turning into a vampire story, but also it's a story about Cohen, the Dawnwalker's story. So it's about the blood of his...
Oh, you mean people got confused that it might be like Blood of the Dawnwalker or something?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
I've seen multiple people confused about that, and it's like, at first I wasn't sure why the title was what it was. Then I thought about it. It's like, oh wait, no, this actually makes a lot of sense. But anyways, as the title kind of shows, this is a game about Cohen's family, more specifically about saving them, and that whole process is the gameplay loop. You have a prologue that's like about 2 to 3 hours long that sets the stage, and then after that, you're let loose. And one of the core elements of gameplay is that there's a timer. It doesn't move in real time, but it's kind of akin to something similar to a Persona style calendar system where you have time, and then as you take actions, time moves forward. An extra wrinkle in it is that since Cohen is a dawn walker, which effectively means that he's a vampire at night and a regular person, well, mostly regular person in the day, the actions he can take differ pretty greatly between day and night. And that even goes down to at night, if you don't keep your health up, if you don't keep him satiated, if you talk with a random NPC and you're like super low health, he's going to like not be able to fight his instincts, and he's just going to suck them dry into like a husk, which is, it only happened to me once, and thank God it was with an enemy, but, that was enough to get me
terrified. People say that the time element is kind of like a currency that you spend almost. Like it's not, like you said, it's not a clock. It's not a ticking, you know, you got to rush, you got to, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah. And I would also say that even though the devs made it clear that you couldn't see everything in a single playthrough, which is technically true, I do feel like when you look at how strict the timer is in like the first day in the prologue before the time, like the actual 30-day timer starts, but like in the prologue, they showcase the timing system. It feels like looking at the prologue and then looking at the rest of the game that maybe they did some adjustments to the timer prior to release to make it more lenient, but there's no way to know for sure straight of just like asking them directly. Which is to say that the timer is not something you should be worried about unless you absolutely, positively have to do a complete 100% playthrough. If you want to do that and you aren't interested, if you're not allowed to do that, then this game is not for you. I'd still say give it a shot because I think there should be more RPGs like this where it's designed where you cannot 100% complete it in a single playthrough. And even if it wasn't for the timer, that would be an issue here, because there are many quests in this game that have definitive like alternate conclusions, and not just in the you fail it sense, but rather, hey, what choices do you make? There's going to be different consequences depending on what you do. And I liked that quite a bit about the experience. I think the number one thing about Dawnwalker that is noteworthy, though, is the writing. I mentioned it when I did the preview session a few months ago that I thought that the writing was very, very well done. It had a level of nuance to it that I was not quite expecting. And I was pretty sure that the rest of the game is going to follow suit on that. But obviously, I wasn't able to say that for sure at the time. But no, yes. Dawnwalker's writing, very, very good. I don't want to go into any like too many details because a lot of the joy of the writing is like experiencing it for yourself. But what I will say is that this game only has technically, after the prologue, one story quest. Everything else is just side quests. And there is other like major side quest chains that have story, but since it's completely missable, it's an interesting sort of, yeah.
That's probably the most interesting thing I've heard about this game. I love, quote, side quest games where it's just like, you're not following like one main long extended through line. It's just kind of like separate components that, you know, of course tell a story and build a world, but you know, it's more up to you, more free form, do what you want. Kind of feels like a saga game in a way, only of course a Western RPG, or But yeah, I kind of categorize these as like side quest games where that is the focus, and well, I love those.
I think there was an earlier, I hope I'm not misquoting them, I think there was an earlier like gameplay dive, one of the first ones they've shown, that they've said like they don't really differentiate between main quests and side quests. Really, it's just that there are quests and they will weave together to tell a story. It's not like, is that kind of how it's presented in game, James?
Yes, it is. For example, there's some side quest chains that deal with major like side characters that I classify as, they're technically side quests, but they also effectively, you could consider them main story. Like Craig's side quest, or Lakra's side quest, or Anka's side quest, that sort of thing, where like it is side content in the sense that it doesn't directly have to do with Cohen's family, but almost every quest in this game is slowly building up to that final conclusion. There's multiple ways you can take the fight to Brensis at the very end too, depending on the side quests you've done and the methods you've discovered for how you could like kind of tackle that. But also for an example, and this is like the one example I'll give, is that I was doing Lakra's side quest, and there was a moment where we had to go to a specific like mountain village for, I forget the exact name of the fantasy race. They have these like their own bespoke like fantasy races they made. And this one is like mountain goat, like anthropomorphized people. I forget the name of the species exactly, but they have a mountain village, and as part of Lakra's quest, she needed to go there to like kind of interrogate them for information about another vampire. And Lakra as a character is, she's been a vampire for a long time, like close to 1,000 years. So she doesn't exactly, it's not that she has no emotions or she doesn't care. It's that she's become so desensitized that usually she likes to go through whatever is the quickest, most efficient way of doing it. And in that case, usually it's like violence. Well, and the whole lead up to that, it's like I played Cohen as trying to be like maintaining part of his humanity, trying to be not necessarily pacifist, but trying to look for the other option first, if that makes sense. And there was one segment that I was really worried, because I made a promise to another character that I'd keep her in line and make sure that she didn't cause any problems at that one, like that mountain village. Now, the whole time we were heading up there, I was worried and thinking, man, how is this going to work? How am I going to convince her not to attack these people on site? And it turns out that a totally unrelated, completely unrelated side quest that I had found like 5-10 hours earlier, where I was dealing with another character that was of that same like fantasy race. Because I had finished their side quest and they knew the matriarch of this village, as we headed up to that village, they immediately said, wait, no, we know you, or well, we don't know you, but we've heard of you and we know that you're a friend. And because they were immediately amicable to like talking, even Lakra, who, like I said, usually just takes the path of least resistance, because of that, she was like, okay, yeah, fine. And kept her cool, because it isn't that she's being violent for violence sake. It's like she's so used to that being the quickest option that if I'd given her a reason to go off the handle, then it would have been a whole task to try and keep her in line. But since there was an easy option in front of her, she was like, yeah, sure. And that was something that you could have missed entirely if you hadn't done that side quest, like completely unrelated side quest earlier.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the original Greedfall, where main quests would unfold differently depending on not necessarily which side quests you did, but which characters you had with you. And it wasn't like something that was delivered to the player as like an obvious thing. It was just kind of like the way the story naturally weaved. It's unfortunate that the Greedfall 2 didn't do any of that really. I had also heard in one of the more recent trailers that the main quest, of course, is to save your family within the time limit, so quote unquote, but they put a point on saying like, even if you fail, the game will continue. So I'm curious like about that outcome, where if you go ahead.
I didn't do it, but I've seen people talk about the exact change. the story quest changes from save your family to if you let the time elapse, it changes to avenge your family.
Okay.
So
it's one of those things where like, maybe that was obvious, yeah, but still kind of like, you know, even if you suck at time limits, and calling it a time limit, I know, is even not quite genuine because it's not really a time limit in terms of like having a rush. But if you deliberately spend your time currency in a way that is not conducive to saving your family, there is no failure state for that. The game will continue. I'm glad they at least thought of that, even if it goes just from save to avenge.
I will say that I really do think that the timer isn't an issue. It's only if you have bugbears about you want to do 100% completion. And even then, like outside of like different quest outcomes, I would say that you can see what feels like the majority or almost all of the core story content in the game on a single playthrough relatively easily, because the way the structure works is that obviously, so you have Brensis and then you have his three underlings who are also vampires that basically have a slice of the game map that is their like fiefdom or whatever. And you can do these activities to anger them and like kind of wrestle control of those areas from these three vampires. And once you get them angry, then you can start their quests. And they're some of the most in-depth quests in the game, obviously. And there's different ways you can handle that. There's even some of them you don't necessarily have to kill them. You can actually negotiate with them for a truce, and basically they'll be like, yeah, fuck Brensis, we'll look the other way when you try and kill him and that sort of thing. But the point being is that while disrupting their activities will sometimes lead to additional quests, like proper story quests, not all of those activities that will anger them do that. So it's perfectly possible to only or try to only do disrupt the activities that are tied to side or not side quests in general, and then do those quests and just not spend any of your time on the angering the three vampires besides Brensis beyond that, because once you've activated that vampire's quests, there's not really any reason to do any of those other activities unless you want to grind so to speak, and you don't really need to ever do that. So
like once you've crossed a threshold to trigger that, there's really no reason to go back and say, I'm going to do these other things that would also trigger it, because you've already done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, I was on the Respec podcast a few days ago, and like Kirk and I basically had the same exact situation where we had like 4 or 5 days left on the timer, and we didn't feel stressed because if anything, we were like, man, there's effectively nothing else for us to actually do. I guess I'll see the ending now. That's what happened with me. So
part of me is like, you know, there's something that's a little bit comforting in a kind of a dumb reptilian sort of way to say like, oh, I'm glad it's kind of lenient, but also like, man, I kind of wish it was a little bit more inconvenient. Maybe obviously I haven't played it myself, but it would be interesting to see people finish or get closer than a game, be like, I never even ventured this area because I didn't have the time or I decided not to prioritize it. But I understand that finding a good landing spot for that is probably something they've thought really hard about and had a lot of internal discussions on. You know, how much should we put in the way of limiting the player? Go ahead.
I'm curious, and I do wish I could talk with the team and just straight up ask like if the timer was less lenient prior to release, because that is absolutely the vibe I get looking at the prologue, because the timer in the prologue is very strict. And if you do not focus on the one task you have been given in the prologue, if you like dawdle too much and do too many other like side stuff, it will end poorly. It will not end well. I'll just say it because it's the prologue. If you don't make the medicine for your mom, if you don't spend the time to make the medicine, if you don't leave enough time for that, and if you don't carefully read the instructions, she'll die. She'll die in the prologue, and you won't be able to save her. You won't have any of, like, when you finish the game, she will not be there. She will be a corpse. She is dead. And that's the thing. You don't beyond the main timer, which is the 30 days, you don't really get any of that. And like I just said, I felt like that 30-day timer is, if anything, too lenient. So I don't know. But that hasn't stopped people from modding out the timer because they are weak and will not survive the winter.
Yeah. How is like the moment-to-moment like gameplay, both in terms from like a conducting quests perspective and then obviously the combat perspective?
Finding and like dealing with quests is pretty good. It feels very Witcher in the sense that like how you just come across quests, and some of them it's organically. A lot of times the way you'll get introduced to a quest is you'll be doing a different quest and they've peppered in little hints on how to like that will kind of point you in the direction of whether it would be through notes or like a character will say something. And it's not like a blinking light, like a blinking lit up arrow pointing you directly towards, hey, do this, stupid. It's more like a wink and a nod. And it's like, oh, that's interesting. Let me check that out later. That sort of thing. And for example, there's a character, Vicho, who has a side quest chain. And I first heard about him through like Ocha's side quest or quest. She mentioned him. I also heard about him like walking through town. I just heard incidental chatter about someone talking about him. And then when I did one of the three vampires, when I was looking at notes, I noticed that he was mentioned in one of the notes. So it's like any one of those three would have pointed me towards looking into him. But the fact that like three separate occasions, there was like something in the game pointing me towards him kind of clues you off that it's like, no, this is a major quest. It's not like major in terms of the actual moment to moment story, but it's major in that it's a really good quest with really good writing. And the developers very clearly wanted you to see it. But stuff like that is pretty common when it comes to like picking up and finding quests. The moment to moment gameplay is very chivalry or like Kingdom Come Deliverance combat, where it's like you attack and block from four cardinal directions, block at the right time and then the right direction to open up enemies for a counterattack. There are some skills that you can unlock that if you perfect block at just the right time, they'll light up one of the four directions to guarantee a critical hit. As you're dealing damage, you'll unlock activation charges, which can be spent for skills. It's pretty basic. I've seen a lot of people that mention that the combat was the weak link to them for the game, and I could see it, but I feel like the combat is good. It just, you need to get a few of those skills before it really starts coming into its own, I feel. Though I will actually mention, I just said that I felt the timer was pretty lenient. Another thing that you have to consider with the timer is that unlocking skills and using skill points also progresses time.
Yeah, I do remember them saying that in one of their deep dives. Like it's supposed to be like a, you know, a risk reward or pros and cons choice they have to make. Like unlock the skill or save the points to have more time, which is an interesting philosophy, I guess. Or maybe it would have been more so if it was a little less lenient. Is there like non-combat progression in any way, like charisma, stealth, lockpicking, that any sort of like speechcraft, anything like that?
There's no stats for like speechcraft or lockpicking or anything like that. There's ways to avoid combat for many encounters, but it's stuff that you have to actively think about on your own and like seek them out. It's not like, oh, you have this stat so you can convince someone to not attack you or to let you go. Like the one example I gave earlier where, because I'd done a previous side quest, I had the option of mentioning, it's like, yeah, no, I know the matriarch's daughter. She can vouch for me. She knows I'm a good vampire. And then it's like, okay, yeah, we'll let you through.
So it's not just, I have charisma +4. I can convince you to stand down. It's more, I have witnessed some character or some quest that has given me a path through this new quest that avoids conflict or something like that. So it's kind of more narrative based. Okay. I think I like that. Sometimes, you know, it feels a little bit. I was playing Zero Parade, which is a very different type of RPG, where you see like a dice roll, and you're like, wait a minute, let me just wear my outfit that gets my stats to exactly where I need to be to get through this with the, you know, the nonviolent option or the special outcome, which it always feels a little bit gamey in that way. And, you know, obviously there's nothing wrong with that, but it's, I don't know. It's cool to see it, to see another RPG take a different approach. I was going to think of like, what else you need to talk about? How was like music or soundtrack?
Music's good. It's very, people are going to compare this game to The Witcher, and it's kind of unavoidable because it is a lot of the same team that worked on like Witcher 1, 2, 3. Like the director is literally, I think, the original director of Witcher 3. So, soundtrack, very Witcher. It's good. If you like,
it has some of the same composers, probably. I think.
Yep.
But like, yep. I don't know exactly if all of them are there because when I was, they made a playlist of some of the songs pre-release, and one of them had a composer who did some stuff on Witcher 3 for sure. I unfortunately cannot pronounce those names, so I will not even try. But yeah, I've definitely seen some common stuff over there.
Thinking if there's anything else to touch on that I've been curious about, because this is a game I have installed on my Steam account, but I've been playing the Final Fantasy Resonance demo, more on that, I guess, later. I guess total playtime. I'm just curious.
Oh, it's not very long. I'd say that my first playthrough effectively took me like 35 hours. Like they were saying they were expecting it to be like 60 hours, and it was a major overshoot. It's a reasonable length where it's got enough meat on its bones to feel substantial, but not too much where it feels like it overstays its welcome. It feels like the perfect length, and thank God, because I was juggling this and Star Wars Zero Company for Game Informer. So if it was 60 hours, I would have freaked out.
Well, I think I'll say one thing though. Go ahead, Mick, and then I'll go next.
I was going to say that, you know how when Kingdom Come, when we talk about that, it's like a game you wait and play after it gets multiple updates and stuff. With Blood of Dawnwalker, it got like huge update, like two huge updates pre-release. But I'll say one thing though, it feels a lot more polished and stable than Zero Company. Like that, I just that game is like, I think when they made that, they looked at all the times I shat on XCOM 2 being one of the worst optimized games I played on PC, and they just said we need to one up that. But yeah, Dawn, really... I would say that you've played it on like an actual PC, like, so yeah, you can talk about it more.
Yeah, Dawnwalker, I've seen some people talk about how they feel like the game is unoptimized, and I think it's a classic case of don't use max settings, stupid. It scales really well to like low spec PCs. Low looks really good, genuinely. Like, I think Mikhail can attest to this. Low, like the low preset does not look bad. It looks good.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of the, I mean, it's too heavy. Like, you know, we have an article with James and I did a tag team on that. We just came over that because we don't have much time. But yeah, this is one of those games where if you're like, you might run into memory limits if you're using super low end stuff. Like, obviously, like PC handhelds are pretty low, but generally, I don't think this is a poorly optimized game. Like, it's just a heavy game because it's a big AAA Unreal Engine 5 game. Like, those don't run on PS4 Pro tier hardware. Like, that's just something everyone has to accept. But yeah, like, I do not think, like, even on the low preset, it looks good. There's just, like, nothing to complain about. I've been playing it on PS5 Pro. I will have some like words on that at some point, hopefully next week, because I was waiting for the patch because they shipped it with like a broken 40 FPS mode and a 30 FPS mode which had some drops, so I was waiting for that to get sorted before actually playing it, so I will like write something about that soon. But yeah, I don't have any problem with the optimization as of now. It's like, it's not perfect, but it's a lot better than the other stuff which is released this month, so that helps.
I'm glad it is like a 30, 40 hour game and not, you know, because Witcher 3 was one of the first games that broke me, where I tend to play most games completionist, but I was an hour, like, I don't know, 70 or 80 in Witcher 3 and Skellige, and which is like the second or third map of the game. And there's a lot of like areas in the water dotted with chests with items that at that point you don't need. And I was going from icon to icon. And that's when I first said, you know what? I'm just going to finish this game. So I've definitely been there where it's just like, I think I'll go see the ending now. And I'm always happy in a world where Crimson Desert keeps getting updates and is a 200-hour game or however long it is now to say, you know what, I might play Blood of Dawnwalker and be in and out in 35 hours. Just curious, though, like, with the way the game is designed, do you think there's a lot of incentive to potentially in the future, like, play through the game again and play it with a different style or a different mindset or try to see different quests?
Oh, absolutely. There's a few decisions I made that they felt like the right decision at the time, but I'm very curious to see how it would go the other way because there was some unintended consequences. And I'm like, okay, I'm curious how the other option that at first glance seemed like the less smart option, if that would work out any better and stuff like that.
Makes sense. Well, you can definitely give a read through James's Blood of Dawnwalker review up on the site at rpgsite.net. And then, Mikhail, you kind of teased about it. You did talk about the PC handhelds for Blood of Dawnwalker. You have a thorough preview up on the site for that. Was there anything else on that front between like the ROG Ally, or the Steam Deck, or the MSI Claw they wanted to touch on here?
So just quickly, that because this was such a heavy game and because James was also covering it for the site and he had PC code, I was like, why don't we do this? Because his MSI Claw AI Plus Minus Pro Max, whatever it is, I'll never get the name right, is actually a lot more powerful than what I have. So that was interesting, like a data point to have. And we might do this like going forward for some of the more heavy stuff if we have access to it. So that's the main takeaway right now.
Yeah, I will note that it seems like very specifically this game wants to have a certain amount of RAM. And since the MSI Claw I have has 32 gigabytes of RAM, I think that's part of the reason why it was performing better, is that it just wasn't being choked for memory. So.
And then I think the last bit of news we have on here is that within the first week, the team at Rebel Wolves has already stated that it has sold over 1 million copies. So, and I was actually at GameStop the other day, and they had this like kind of blasting on their like main TVs there. So I think it's gotten a pretty good push from the publisher.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that means it's already been successful because this team effectively made the game in 4 years. And yeah, it is like a Western team, but it's not a massive, massive AAA team. I think they said it was like 150 people or something like that for the core team. So I mean, like, if it's already sold 1 million copies at $70 or thereabouts, it's like, yeah, I feel like the team must be happy about that.
Mikhail or James, any other final thoughts on Blood of Dawnwalker?
I'm looking forward to playing more of it after Tuesday.
I'm looking forward to starting
when I have more time. Yeah.
With that, we'll move on to the second game that we were going to talk about this week. More of just like an introduction to this one. Onimusha, Way of the Sword, released, you know, basically at the exact same time. We'll probably do a full thorough kind of podcast review on a different week once we can get either Hayes on the podcast or we can have other people, participants, finishing through the game. But I guess we're just handing it back to James and Mikhail, but also Chow has also played a little bit of this one. We have the written review for Onimusha Way of the Sword from Hayes up on the site. But those that have played it here on the podcast, I don't really know anything about Onimusha. I know that the first two we talked about, people, I think, were playing those games like earlier in the spring and kind of like preparation for this one. But how is the newest entry in this series? I'll go hand it off to James again, and then Mikhail and Chow can chime in as the conversation dictates.
Yeah, so I've been playing a little bit of Onimusha. I haven't played as much as Dawnwalker. I haven't even finished it.
Right.
According to Steam, I've put about 9 hours in, which is a little bit more than I thought, but maybe a little bit of that was idling. I feel like Hayes mentioned this on a podcast a few weeks ago, where it kind of, with Onimusha specifically, it felt weird because we both had played it so many times before it was actually out through like various preview events or opportunities. And I was like, man, just release the game already. So I'm sure I've talked about my preview impressions of the game on many a podcast. So it's kind of difficult to decide where to start talking about this. I guess the one thing I'll focus on is that I really like the main character, Miyamoto Musashi. He is a very fun character. He's a cocky guy. He's with a heart of gold. You know the type. The facial animations are so damn good. The expressions and whatnot are so good. Game is just feel good time. Not very difficult. I'd say regular enemies, like by design, you're meant to kind of just like mow through for the most part. But good power fantasy there. And then the boss fights are actually a bit of a challenge. They actually expect you to use your full kit, or well, not necessarily use your full kit, but they
struggle a little bit.
You'll struggle a little bit, and you do see a benefit from using your full kit. The last boss I faced was this demon that had like a pompadour, but it was like a flesh pompadour, and then on his back he had like a pair of lungs like outside his body they used to like float, and he had like a lot of like air-based attacks. And one of the things you can unlock really early on is a deflect, where if you're holding down the block button and then press another button at just the right time, you can reflect the projectile back at an enemy. And so every time, like, I realize, wait a second, if he shoots like waves of air at me, can I reflect that back to him or deflect that back to him? And you can, and that's neat. And that's not a thing the game explicitly told me I could do, but I thought about it. It's like, hey, it's worth a shot, and it worked. Boss fights are pretty good so far. I might actually be further into the game than I'm giving myself credit for, because I did kind of really bum rush through the opening segments of the game because I'd played them before, and I was skipping cutscenes because it's like, I've seen this cutscene before. I've seen this cutscene multiple times. I'm not going to watch this again because I know what happens.
I was just going to say, like, for me personally, I've been kept blind in this game. I didn't try the demo. I just know a new anime is coming out, and I bought it day one, and that's basically
it. It's very, very different from the original Onimusha games, and I've definitely seen some reviews that have held that against it, and I'm not sure if that feels fair to the game that we got.
Yeah, that's pretty unfair. I love this game so far. I don't think they should do it as a comparison like that.
Some people try and say that this game is open world, and no, it is not.
It's absolutely not open world. Like, out of all the things to say, that's like objectively wrong.
I feel like Pramada is a better comparison. You know how like you're picking stages?
Yeah. It's like that, except instead of selecting the stages and then riding a tram to them, it's like Kyoto is like a hub, and you can walk to and from the mission areas, and there's stuff you can find in between the mission areas, but it's not open world. It's not like when you're going through the regular quests, you're effectively going to see most of Kyoto. The only segments that you're not going to see are like the small sections where there might be a side quest here or something, and it's not like those are very long or in depth. It's just there if you want to do it. But yeah, I'm enjoying it quite a bit. Combat's good. Story seems interesting so far. I'm very curious to see how that will go. Game runs really well. And looks really well. I mean, that's a Capcom game, which we can say now definitively, now that they fixed Dragon's Dogma 2's performance, that it's like, no, Capcom games, every RE Engine game just runs well.
Yeah, I'm playing this game on Ultra, and no frame dips. But last week I was talking about, or the 2 weeks ago, I was talking Brigadine, and that game could barely freaking run. And this is like running on max setting, like never have a frame dip on my PC. It's just like insane.
Have you tried Onimusha on Android though?
Oh, you mean like on Game Native?
Yeah, let's do that.
Actually, wait, maybe I could put down my Odin 3 and try it.
Yeah, the just on the PC port, I'd say that obviously, it runs well, but this specific PC port, I think a lot of people aren't, who don't play a lot of Capcom games aren't realizing that this is the first time Capcom has actually, like, done proper ultra-wide support for, like, cutscenes. Also, as far as I can tell, instead of it having like menus and cutscenes being like letterboxed to 16:9, this time it's all properly like ultra wide. I've been like playing that. Obviously, like I'm using my Steam Deck connected to my ultra wide monitor, so I have to play it on like the lowest settings and stuff. But I am testing that out, and they have put in a ton of work. I'd say that the PC and PS5 Pro versions of this, which I'll be covering in an article like in a few days, hopefully, have like quite a big jump over the last gen or like the current whatever base consoles compared to like Pragmata and RE9. So that's interesting. I'm curious to see what happens with Dragon's Dogma 2, like how James said that they improved the performance, which they did. Like Dragon's Dogma 2 went from like 11 to 14 FPS to 35 FPS on Steam Deck in the same area. Like I verified that. So I want to see if they do anything cool with the expansion. But yeah, Onimusha is super well optimized. And I may as well just talk about it right now. Because of these weird embargo, like staggered things, I decided to focus on the Switch 2 version because that was like the one I was most interested in. And it's by far Capcom's best Switch 2 port. Like it doesn't run at 60 or whatever, but it's fully playable handheld to the point where it did not bother me like other games like Elden Ring, which I have a lot to say. But yeah, like Onimusha 2, if you play that on Switch 2, you can, like, I can just say, yeah, fine, go and enjoy the game. This is not one of those things where, oh, maybe you should consider getting it elsewhere. You want to play it on Switch 2, it's good on Switch 2. And yeah, like, very happy with that. I will probably, like, I don't know where I'm going to finish it. I have like 5-6 hours in, or like 3-4 hours in, depending on cutscenes and all, on like 4 platforms now. So I have to like take a call at some point.
I'm trying to think of the last time we had like a Switch performance impression that was as positive as this.
You know, like, you say that. I actually laughed because when I saw like a friend of mine posted the impressions on Reset Era, and some user quoted it and said, "Mikhail not complaining about a Switch 2 port, it must be a miracle."
And I've reloaded Dragon's Dogma 2 in preparation for the DLC coming out, the Dark Arisen. First of all, I was chatting with Adam about this. I had forgotten that because of the way the game works, I'll state this generically, I have a file at the beginning of New Game Plus, and I don't have like an old save, like I can't go back. So like, oh, I guess I'll just have to play through the game again. And I haven't really turned it on since the new patch to see the new performance, because even on a pretty powerful PC, it did struggle a little bit in like some of those more densely populated towns. So I'm pretty excited to see, you know, with the year plus of thinking how it's going to run.
It's not one-to-one because obviously I have a new CPU in this system since the last time I played it, but I went from being CPU limited in the main city at like dips below like 50 FPS to now it's like almost locked at like 120.
That's crazy.
It's a big difference.
That makes me more excited. It's maybe a dumb reason, yeah, but it, like, hell yeah.
they even optimized the thing on console. Like a friend of mine who, I think when you on console, you can enable or disable ray tracing and stuff. So he used to have everything maxed out, and like on his TV, it shows you like the, you know, if you have VRR and your LG TV, there's a way to see the actual refresh rate of the screen. So he sent me the thing before and after the patch, and I think it was something like 49 FPS or 49 Hertz or whatever. And post, it was like 84 or something. And I was like, oh, so they've improved it even on console. Like, I'm not downloading that because, you know how it is, right? With the review code for the expansion, they likely will just be a re-download, so I'll just wait for that. But I did download it on PC because I was most curious if they fixed it on handhelds. And yeah, like I'm confident in it on Switch 2 now, at least. Like, I know James played it and all, but after seeing how it is on Steam Deck, I'm like, okay, this can be playable on Switch 2. I believe it now.
Well, we'll probably follow back up on Onimusha, like I said, at a future date, but we're happy to get a little quick look in here since it has released, and we do have a review up on the site, which reminds me, yeah, I should point you to Hayes's review. If you want to see his full-up impressions, you can just go to rpgsite.net, hit the Reviews tab, and you'll see both Onimusha, Way of the Sword, as well as, of course, The Blood of Dawnwalker right there. We still have a lot of other previews and interviews that I at least want to kind of wrap through here. This next one here is one of Josh's, who is not here to speak to it. It is about the upcoming Another Eden Begins, releasing in that glut of mid-September releases right on top of Trails Second Chapter and Fire Emblem. So talking about Studio Prisma and how Another Eden Begins basically adapted the existing mobile game to a new console version. And James is definitely better equipped. Sorry, Josh is definitely better equipped to speak to that more than I can. So once he's back on the podcast, we'll have him talk about his time talking to Studio Prisma about how Another Eden Begins kind of was conceived and how it came to life. This next preview is actually the rare one that I can actually speak to. Around the same time as Gamescom was going on, I had the opportunity to have a hands-off preview with ArenaNet for the upcoming Guild Wars 3. This was very kind of old school in a way, like in the sense that at Gamescom, which ArenaNet's always had a pretty strong presence on, people were able to see this behind closed doors at Gamescom and then speak to it or write their previews on it, but no footage was allowed. We were allowed to record a Q&A, but only for like referencing, not to like share anything from. And then ArenaNet also did not really release any other information on their own when the embargo lifted. So it was very much just kind of like henpeck anyone who had access who could describe what they saw, but weren't provided B-roll or anything. It kind of reminds me of when Cyberpunk was first shown behind closed doors at E3 2018, I think. Where it's like, believe me, we saw this game, but we can't show you any footage. And CD Projekt wasn't going to show you any. So we got to see about 14 minutes of footage or so. They called it pre-alpha. It was primarily focused on movement and combat. So we didn't really see anything related to guild structures, social structures, the map, the quests, equipment, or anything like that. It was, here's a couple characters in a party. Here's how enemies will appear on screen. Here's how combat flows. Here's some of our philosophies for movement, things like that. I wrote up the preview trying to be pretty thorough about, all right, I can't show you footage, so I have to describe what I saw. So it's a little bit dry, but I kind of had to take that tack to just, you know, to actually, you know, paint the picture of what it looked like. Some of the key takeaways for people that aren't as familiar with Guild Wars 1 and 2 is that this game is trying to scope itself in between those two games. So Guild Wars 1 is very much a hub-based game where you go to an outpost, you party up with typically 8 other people, and then you go into instance, you know, world environments to take quests, do dungeons, things like that. Guild Wars 2 kind of took the larger scale approach where you can go to the world, you could team up with 50 other people, or in other cases, more than that, to take on world bosses. And obviously it had the more structured game modes like dungeons and raids that were less than that, but the big world versus world and PvP modes were dozens and dozens of people. Where Guild Wars 3 is saying we're going to see about 20 people on screen in combat. That's kind of where they're finding their sweet spot. They focused a lot on momentum. They focused a lot on movement, knocking enemies around, doing more impacts if you're like dive bombing from a high elevation. Certain enemies you won't be able to knock around unless you build up your skills to be able to, and your momentum to be able to push them back. They talk about how elevation plays a key role, like knocking enemies off of cliffs, things like that. Those are the things they really wanted to focus on. The combat still seemed pretty early to me, but it was, you know, pre-alpha footage for a game that's going into beta late next year. A lot of the UI elements they said were definitely placeholders, and it was pretty obvious from the footage there. It still looked pretty polished for what it was. The game has been in development for like 4 years, so I'm not totally surprised there. I won't be surprised if we see some footage soon. I was expecting them to drop their own official footage with the embargo, so I was surprised that they didn't. And I kind of think that's a bad move, because it seems very like, I don't know, it's not effective just to have RPG site, MMORPG.com and other things just describing what they saw, and then people having to go on Reddit and like do like a synthesis of all the different outlets describing things in slightly different ways. And then there's just confusion about, wait, there's only 20 players on screen. Like, well, in combat, but cities are different. I don't know. I thought the messaging was, could have been better. But I think that's enough of an introduction. If you really want to see like detailed thoughts, you can just read the preview. I go into a lot of depth about what I saw and what I took away from it. And hopefully they'll share some actual footage soon. I wouldn't be surprised if they do. Another Switch 2 game. It seems like this one, Mikhail, is not on the same level as Onimusha. You took a look at Wolong Fallen Dynasty for Switch 2.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of those weird announcements that I don't think we really expected.
Yeah, I think because they announced the sequel at the Xbox showcase in June. So because they had that, they probably just wanted to bring the first game. But the first game, so like I remember because I was talking to James pre-release about it because even I was covering it. And Wolong was like, I think that was the game that James had these AMD issues where it was just glitching the GPU or something. Yeah, so anyway, so it ran really badly on PC at launch. It's not great even now, but it's a lot better. The Switch 2 port is, yeah, I'm just going to, like, I'm not holding back. It's the worst Switch 2 port since Rogue Traders launched. So, yeah, you can read the article. It's, like, it's below, like, PS4 Pro. I don't have my base PS4 usable anymore, so I can't compare it to that. But it's, like, worse than the Steam Deck. In a lot of ways, handheld and docked is worse than PS4 Pro, a lot worse than PS5. Like, I just would not bother playing it here. Like, if you, even if it, this is not even like, if I have no other option, should I play it like Elden Ring? I just skip it. Like, just play something else. Do you have limited time on this planet? Don't waste it and Wolong on Switch.
It's got deep for a poor impression.
You know, considering the most recent Atelier game was on Switch 2 for like a decent amount of time there. It seems like Koei Tecmo just isn't maybe the great at Switch 2 development at the moment.
To be honest, I would say that, but then Dynasty Warriors Origins is like the best Switch 2 port of the year, like by far. And it's a lot better than like all these other PS4 tier ports which people praise, which are like kind of like shouldn't be paying full price for PS4 tier experiences on Switch 2. And Dynasty Warriors Origins is like, it's just fantastic in general on Switch 2. So yeah, I do not recommend Wolong. Like, no point wasting more time on it. We've probably spoken more about it than they spent porting it. So yeah. What's next?
We have a couple other previews here from Hayes. He has had a busy week and continues to because he's at PAX right now. He had a hands-on session with Exodus, which is the upcoming, I guess, Mass Effect-like is how we keep describing it. And they've explicitly stated that as an inspiration as well. So it's fair on its face. So he wrote up a preview from Exodus as well as an interview with, let me make sure I get with the name right. Their narrative director, I'm trying to find a name. Didn't put this at the front. Drew Karpshin. Sorry, that took me a while. Didn't put it in the lead, so I had to dig for it. So two previews up or two features up on the site for Exodus, which we just recently learned has the release date next year in April, right alongside Final Fantasy VII. I almost said Resonance again. What is it? Revelation. Too many R words. So that'll be interesting because Exodus is April 7th and that one will be April 8th. So it'll be an interesting kind of juxtaposition there. But yeah, hopefully we can get Hayes on the site to talk about Onimusha on the podcast. And then he could also talk about Exodus at the same time since he was able to go hands on with it. But he basically is pretty glowing on it, says that, you know, it's so much more than, you know, legally distinct Mass Effect, and thought pretty positively on it. Which I think, you know, this is a game that has not shown well, at least in my opinion, for some of its like pre-release footage and the way it's been marketed to this point. So cool to see that it is seemingly coming together in a pretty cool way. But we'll follow up on that with Hayes next available opportunity. A couple more positive performance features here from Mikhail, specifically around the upcoming PS5 ports for Trails from Zero, Trails to Azure, and Switch 2 ports as well. So obviously coming from PH3 from Durante's team, what can you tell us about these ports other than we expected them to be pretty good and they ended up being pretty good?
So besides what, I don't know why NIS America didn't advertise that they have save transfer, which is like a huge deal for cross-gen stuff. And not only did like it, the ports were done by PH3, and because it's a Falcom thing and the ports were done by PH3, I managed interviewing Durante for the fourth time on RPG site. I actually need to check if anyone's been interviewed that many times on the site, but I'll save that for something else. But yeah, the thing I noticed immediately when I downloaded the PS5 versions were, it gave me a prompt, like, while downloading, saying you can continue playing with your save data. And I was like, why did they not advertise this? Because when they announced no upgrade path, people started asking about save data and no one had any idea. So yeah, like, the Switch 1 save data works on Switch 2 versions. And the PS4 one works on PS5. Now, I thought the Switch 1 and Switch 2 would happen because PS3 did both ports. But for PS4 to PS5, this is literally reading Falcom's ports into a new PS3 version. So they did it without, like, having access to the PS4 version, which I thought was pretty cool. And what I didn't know until the interview is, he even implemented diagonal save transfer. So you can go from Switch 1 0 completed save into Azure on Switch 2 for people who probably bought one game on Switch 1 and buy the next one on Switch 2. So that I thought was pretty cool. And as for the other stuff, it's like super well optimized. Like, there's like a 1080 120 mode on Switch 2 handheld, 1440 120 docked, or 4K 60. And that's like a Switch 2 limit. You literally cannot run a game above 4K 60 because it's like an HDMI or system limit. And on PS5 and PS5 Pro, both he got it to 4K 120, like, perfectly throughout. And he gave, like, a very detailed answer on how that even came about, because discovered some legacy code issues with, like, how Falcom had done it when they were working on it. And yeah, I urge you to read the interview where we also spoke about the state of the industry, Steam hardware, how he prefers the original Steam controller from, like, many years ago to the new one. And yeah, there's not much else to say over there, but I didn't do a comparison because a PS3 is patching the Switch 1 and PC versions to add this new texture style option. Because I don't know if y'all have played the, like, if y'all played the new ports, which NIS did, but the textures were, like, upscaled. So what they did for the, so what they did for the Switch 2 and PS5 version is you have three options now. One is the modern, which is the upscale texture. One of them is the classic PS4 textures, which are quite blurry. And then the other third option, which is also new, is this thing called point sampled, which gives you, like, the original textures, but, like, I don't know what the exact word to use over here, but it's like, it's, you know, like when you emulate a PS1 game and you run it at, like, five times the resolution or whatever, it's like one of those things. So you're still getting the old textures without upscaling, but it's, he calls it point sampled. I guess that's obviously the correct term. So that I found is massively, like, the best option to play. And that's coming to the PC and Switch 1 versions in a patch in a few days. So I thought there's no point in doing a comparison when, like, two of the three pending versions are getting patched. So yeah, you can read the article I did talking about the new ports and the interview over there.
Yeah. I'm glad that texture stuff was resolved, because even though I made a stink about how, like, at the time, and I asked, wasn't being super forthcoming about the differences between the PS4 and Switch versions of that port back in the day. The funny thing is that I actually preferred the PS4 textures over the upscale they did. So it was like an interesting situation to find myself in. But still, good to see that's a thing. Also, not entirely related, but I'm pretty sure, Mikhail, that I've interviewed Miyazaki at CyberConnect 2 more times than you've interviewed Durante.
A challenge accepted. I need to make sure Durante keeps doing Falcom port somehow so I can win this.
Two other interviews that were up on the site, one from Mikhail and then one from Josh, who already put one up from a PAX interview that he's had within the last couple of days. So first, Mikhail, you were able to talk with the developer and self-publisher behind Angeline Era, which is the kind of like indie East-like, I think is how it's been typically described, that originally released late last year.
Yeah, so they had the console versions come out a few days ago, and when they announced the console ports, obviously, like, when the PC version came out, I discovered this because of James when, like, he was posting about it, and then I found out that this is the same team that did Anodyne, this game I played really long ago, like, I think 2013 on iOS, and I've not kept up with a lot of their stuff, which they've done since, so I picked up Angeline Era, loved it. Think it's a super good blend of classic ease, like with the bump combat, which was like everyone made a big deal about that. But yeah, it is really, really interesting. I also asked why they went with that combat system in the interview, and it's, you can read that. And because they were doing the console versions, I was like, you know, here's a good time. Like, it's going to be in the news again. Let's do the interview. So managed to do this over email like a few days ago. And yeah, I wanted to get it up. I was going to get it up like yesterday or day before, but we've literally had so much going up on the site that don't even have enough feature blocks on top to feature it all. I think that might be a good or bad problem to have. I don't know. Alex told me it's fine, so I'm going to keep doing it. But yeah, it was a fun interview to have because I wanted to talk to them since I played the PC version, but just never got an opportunity around that. So got to find out how they went to Ireland for some inspiration, what they did for the narrative, because a lot of people, they just assume like in a Zelda or an Ease game, like old Ease, I should say, the narrative is like this throwaway thing. But over here, it's actually like a very big deal.
It's a big part of it, and, yeah.
And talking about like how many, like how they have like secrets and, you know, like letting players do things on their own and trusting them is like a big philosophy they have, and that pays off in this game. And one more thing I've seen with this game and a lot of these other games which are like very design driven, it's like you see people say, oh, it's not a game for everyone, and like, why is that a problem? Like, everything shouldn't be for everyone. If everything's for everyone, everything's for no one. That's how I think. So I asked about that also. I was like, what do you think of that? So got a lot of good responses for their design philosophy, what they think about difficulty. They even commented on that, like accessibility versus difficulty, how it's different to like Dark Souls and Silksong, where those games don't have difficulties, but then your build will adapt to what you want and they become build driven. They didn't want to do that, so they made it so you have difficulty options, but you can't just like steamroll everything and stuff. So it's worth reading, and I genuinely think like if you've not played this and you enjoy like classic Ease and older Zelda games and just enjoy exploration and discovery in games, this is worth playing. It was, I think it was James's favorite game last year. I think it was in his branching path. Yeah.
It's really good.
I'd hold off on the Switch port though. Like, it's a little iffy right now. I'll see how that goes because I'm going to be covering it when I do my, like, one of those boost mode article updates. So yeah, I would just wait on the Switch port. So yeah.
And the last interview we have was one that Josh was just able to have over at PAX. So he put this up literally today, so within 24 hours. This is with Yosuke Shiokawa from Fahrenheit 213. They just recently announced a smaller project called Lunar Pulse, which is like a single-player roguelike card battler. And then a game that's been in development for a while called Tsurugihime, which is a side-scrolling RPG, I believe. So he was able to talk with Shiokawa-san about, you know, what it was like to go from a bigger studio like Delightworks and forming their own studio, how multiple people have been doing that across the industry, you know, across, you know, in both hemispheres in recent years, the differences and challenges between working on at a bigger studio on known IP versus working at a smaller indie studio on newer projects. Also, some interesting like trivia, like why did they name it Fahrenheit 213? I guess the answer is it's the boiling point of water in Fahrenheit is 212, so they wanted to be one higher than the boiling point of water, so 213. And then you would be proud, Mikhail. Josh did ask, "Do you drink coffee?" at the very end, and he said, "Yes, I drink. I drink Starbucks." So take that how you will.
That's not good.
But so maybe Josh will be able to speak to it at more length next time he's on the podcast. But a real fun interview with a Japanese indie team that has a presence over at PAX. So a real cool opportunity for Josh, just from the last day or so. With that, we're an hour in and we can finally talk about news and the state of play. So let's just keep going. I really had no idea what to list first here. So I went with this one just because it had the most news posts about it. And I think probably Chow or James will have to take point here. This is for finally getting some details and some clarification for the long in development Fate Extra Record. So this is a game that was first announced back in like 2020. It was going to be originally published by like Bandai, but then that kind of fell through and we didn't know when it was going to come out. It was first going to come out in 2024 or 2025. And then weren't 100% sure. It seems like it finally got a release date kind of out of nowhere. It wasn't expected for January 28th, 2027, and is now being published by Aniplex and is going to get a Switch 2 release. So I know a lot of people within our Discord and within our, you know, RPG site followers, we're kind of wondering, when are we going to see Fate Extra Record? And I don't know if we were expecting to get, you know, a bunch of news dropped this week, but we did.
We weren't able to say anything publicly. Now that it's like confirmed it's playable at TGS, I guess I can say I'm playing it at TGS, but
hell yeah.
So,
but like the previous news that came out of it with the long delay pushback and say there's no release date or something, everyone thought it was canceled or something.
Right.
Yeah, but it's not canceled at all. So it's just like
anything is the opposite. They finally got it back on track. So
this is why I think some people freak out too much when like something is delayed indefinitely. Sure, sometimes an indefinite delay can mean like we're rebooting this entirely and maybe it's years out and maybe it'll be canceled. But also could just mean we don't know and we're going to nail it down later and it may not be that much later.
And alongside the release date announcement and the details about the kind of like the publisher switch up, they did release also just like a gameplay and update trailer for it. So it's more like not really a trailer, it was like a 17-minute gameplay like showcase. So I'll be honest, I don't know enough about the game to really know what to pull out of this to say like what's exciting about this gameplay, but cool to not only give a, you know, a release window, but it's show like, here's the game running, you know, this is what you'll be playing in under 5 months. And I guess James will just be able to go hands on in not too long. So we'll just be able to say hands on what the gameplay is like in, you know, before the end of the month or early next month.
Yeah. Before the end of the month, like in 3 weeks, I'll be able to say exactly what I thought of it. Cause like 2 weeks from now, I'll be in Japan. I won't be able to talk about it. But 3 weeks from now, I'll be back and I'll be able to talk about it.
You're going to be busy carrying a lot of random Square Enix music from me. So I don't blame you. But yeah. But yeah, so just one last thing about... Yeah, definitely. Probably a bigger one because there's like vinyl on sale. But yeah, the last thing about Fate before we move on is that if you remember last year when they announced the Switch 2 console, Exceed was doing Story of Seasons, Daemon X Machina, Titanic Scion, and Rune Factory. And they made a big deal about how the games were on cartridge while they weren't in Japan. Like, they had the key card thing. And I was even able to interview them about that. And they said, yes, we want to do that as far as we can for, like, when it's economically possible. For Fate, it's being handled by Marvelous Europe in Europe, Exceed in US, and Aniplex in Japan. Only the North American version from Exceed on Switch 2 actually has the game on cartridge. The others are key cards. So I guess the Marvelous Europe stuff either didn't do well or they don't want to spend on it. And in Japan, like, barely anyone does proper physicals at this point, sadly. So yeah, like, that's one thing to note. If you live in, like, if you live outside North America and you're buying it on Switch 2, if you want the actual physical, you got to get the US version or the North American version.
That's pretty rare, I don't know, to have a publisher dependent. Well, I don't know how rare. Not common to have a publisher dependent. Is it physical or is it a download? So there's a lot of RPG related news at the State of Play. I kind of bend these next sets together. Anything Final Fantasy related? So two main Final Fantasy topics. Of course, they ended on the big Final Fantasy VII revelation. Like new gameplay, like there's been multiple trailers for this game, but a pretty extensive gameplay look, and that's along with the release date. We already mentioned the release date was April 8th, 2027, which I think is kind of what people predicted because of, you know, where the Square Enix fiscal year kind of lines up. But April 8th is the date, Final Fantasy VII Revelation. The gameplay trailer I thought they showed was, it was interesting, but also kind of like it was. Not a good capstone for a streaming event, because it was very specific about how the airship moves around the world, how grappling hooks work in Wutai, and a little bit about like the what do they call it, the fit system, like the four different classes that the characters can take on in combat and things like that. And a little bit about like combos, like I showed like Cid and Yuffie doing a battle combo, one of those synergy attacks, which is fine information, but it's just kind of like a little bit granular for a capstone for a release date, I thought. Which, of course, if you played the other two games and, you know, you're still on board the remake trilogy, sure, you're excited. But I just thought it was an interesting way to capstone the state of play. I don't know. What did we think about the Revelation gameplay? Any key takeaways from it?
Well, for me personally, I care more about the story trailer than the gameplay trailer. I'm just going to wait for the gameplay. Right. I already know what to expect from the gameplay, right? I'm sold day one. I don't need like all that to convince me to buy it, right? I already bought that collector's edition.
So, you've already spent hundreds.
I'm looking more like through the dialogue. There's like this one scene where Cloud said nothing to eight of us can handle. I mean, who's the eighth party member?
I'm glad you brought that up because I have to bring this up. They focused on the fact that you can play cutscene dialogue at like either 1.5 or 2 times speed. Like they literally highlighted that during the showcase. What a specifically weird thing to highlight. Like, sure,
I mean,
done that. Go ahead.
I posted like on Blue Sky that I was like, I don't care about fast forwarding cutscenes. I love the cutscenes. I want to kill Chadley. Like, that's what's more important. I don't care about fast forwarding cutscenes. Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a weird, like, I feel like what they should have done is like what Chao said, right? Like, you announce the release date, you do it like a short story hype trailer or whatever, and then save the longer one for like a post showcase thing. Or like you remember they did the dedicated Rebirth showcase, like a Sony state of play for Rebirth, mm-hmm. and they had more time over there so they could let it breathe. Here, it felt like a 20-minute gameplay thing, like shoehorned into this 10-minute or 9-minute thing, whatever they had. So it was definitely weird. And to be honest, I didn't watch it live because I was like covering the news for this stuff, and there was so much stuff happening with FF7 reveal screenshots, editions, and like there was just way too much stuff at that time. So I finally watched it yesterday. So I agree with you. Like it was just a weird video. And
because there was one part where like Yuffie like grapples up to the top of a Wutai building and they're like, pretty spectacular view, huh? And I was like, I guess.
I get why they do that. I think they wanted to show those statues on the side of the mountains just so that
they did kind of focus that, like, remember this? I don't know.
I didn't watch this trailer. Did they tease the section where Don Corneo comes back and harasses?
No, they did not tease that, but they teach that. But they kind of teased those statues in the view, technically.
Yeah.
You could actually see it in the background, right?
This is one of those things I actually kind of forgot about, but I recently replayed Final Fantasy VII, the original, to guide it. And like, oh yeah, Don Corneo comes back and is kind of being a creep. He's being a creep with Yuffie and Elena on those statues. Like, okay.
What can I say? But you know what? There's a cat mini. You had to find all the cats in the world now. So
They showed a little bit of like camera gameplay and like, sure, that's fine.
Adam, you're back. I also you're doing Octopath. I mean, you're doing Elliot guides with FF7 with finding cats now.
No, there you go. But I also just don't know how I feel about the fit system in general. Like it feels like they're, I don't want to say shoehorning, but like they're implementing a class like system in a game that didn't have them, in a trilogy that hasn't had them, but it has them now in the third game. Like, but why?
It does kind of feel like a way to make it different. Like, it's new, it's an enhancement, it's better.
I don't know. I just feel like it's to make up for like certain character is gone. You definitely know who. So I think it's like, oh, since you don't have a mage type character, we'll have other characters could be the mage type now. So I guess maybe that's what they were aiming for. So everyone can play those roles. Like, all right, Cloud might be missing. And now you can have, I don't know, Cid being the tank or something.
It's just weird. Like, yeah, Cid's the tank and Vincent's the summoner. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess we're doing this now. All right. Like, I don't know. Well, I guess I'll wait till I play it to reserve judgment, but to me, I'm just like, I'm not saying hell yeah classes in Final Fantasy VII Revelation. I'm just like, oh, I guess they're doing that. We'll see how it turns out.
I was not a fan of that map with so many icons, though. Like, that's like the worst part of Rebirth. So I don't want to see more UB stuff, but it seems like we'll get more UB stuff.
I'm not surprised. Hopefully I guess I kind of came to terms with that with Rebirth. Like, yep, it's just, it's it's designed similarly to Rebirth, only now it's, if it's a little bit more open-ended, maybe that'll be slightly better. If you truly can just take your ship and go wherever, first or second or third, that might be fun, but we'll have to see how it's executed.
Maybe another side quest game.
You know what would sum in that trailer? You know when they did the parachute dive by near Ruby Weapon? Imagine if Ruby Weapon swatted you in midair.
That would be... Well, they showed like parachuting. It's like, yeah. Look at that. You parachuted directly into Utai. Then later, like, by the way, don't worry. You can fast travel anywhere you've already been. Like, oh, thank God. I don't need to see that parachute animation every single time I want to go somewhere.
But I guess you'll have to see it. It's like, the Ruby Weapons are completely harmless. It's like right near its face. It doesn't aggro or anything. So, I don't know.
But I wish I was more positive on it. But, like, I did really like Rebirth once I played it. Even though it felt like maybe a little bit like a...
It's a little busy, buddy. But it's actually, like, one of my favorite games of all time. I give it a 10 out of 10 for me, personally. I think it's one of the best games ever made.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot, but it was very much like kitchen sink approached a little bit, and it feels like they're kind of just aiming the same tact here. So I'm still confident that I'll end up liking Revelation, but I don't know if I'll like it more than Rebirth. But, you know, I guess we'll see you next April. And then the other game that got a lot of focus over this week, of course, is the Final Fantasy game releasing in October. This is, of course, Final Fantasy Resonance, which is the first HD2D explicitly Final Fantasy game. Obviously not the first HD2D game from Square Enix. The main thing that they announced here was that it has a prologue demo available now, which is a decent like 4 or 5 hours of the first chapter that can carry over your progress into the release in late October. So a lot of people have already talked about how they feel about the demo in terms of its gameplay, in terms of its story. I'm about 4 hours into it. And then you also wrote up a preview here, James. I don't remember the context for this. Was this just based on the demo or based on another opportunity you had to play the game?
Another opportunity I had to play the game. Seems like it was probably the final build at like Square Enix's North American HQ. They had a preloaded save for us and said, hey, you can play from here. Don't go to this area and this area, but otherwise, like, go wild and what? One of those situations.
They just told you can't go there. Don't go there. You're not allowed. Yeah. We're watching you.
Yeah, because it wasn't I guess I'll just give some build, it seems like.
Right. Give some very initial impressions of the demo. I've kind of enjoyed it a lot. I think the story is kind of like the story and characters are a little bit archetypal and simple, but I'm actually kind of okay with that because sometimes I feel like when they try to go too far the other direction to make something like prestigious or, you know, we're going after the Game of Thrones crowd or whatever, they kind of lose the plot. We're just having like a young, charismatic, you know, hero of a kingdom go off on an adventure involving spirits and espers. Like, you know what? I kind of actually like that it's just pared back and it's a little bit simpler. Like, I've actually really enjoyed the gameplay of the demo. I'm playing on an expert and some of the optional fights are actually kind of challenging. I think the vision system is pretty flexible and neat. So I've actually really been pretty positive on it. It's got like these treasure medals that are kind of like mini medals, which is, you know, a tried and true little collectathon sort of thing for a game of this type. Adam, this is actually a perfect game for like a bullet list style walkthrough if you're bored in late October.
I think I might have other things I'm working on. Yeah, I'm retired.
Okay. Okay, so maybe I'll do that, but it has that sort of flow to it. Like, sure, your main quest tells you to go here, but if you go to this place, you can fight this area and get this vision, and you can find the treasure medals here and here. And if you turn them in, you get these items, and you can kind of build your character slightly differently. And that's all within chapter one. So if it opens up more as the game goes on, I'm excited to see where this might go. This might be my most anticipated release remaining this year.
Before we move on, I kind of just want to talk about briefly the Final Fantasy VII Revelation date. We sort of expected this, but for like Square Enix, for those that aren't aware, a lot of these Japanese companies work with something that are called medium terms, which are basically a set of three fiscal years. And this term for Square Enix, the one we're currently in, which ends next April 2027 or April 1st, 2027, is the one where they called it Square Enix Reboots and Awakens, if you remember that, where they're like kind of basically saying we're going to kind of lay low, release a lot of ports, release, you know, smaller scale games, et cetera, and kind of, you know, reshuffle our marketing, our development, our teams and everything. So 2027, the fiscal year starting April 1st, is kind of when they've been aiming for, and they're hoping to kind of show off, this is what we've been building towards. So they have Revelation in April. We know they have Kingdom Hearts later in the year. Not sure about Dragon Quest XII, what's going to happen with that. But I guess my point is this is going to be a pivotal year for Square Enix. Like, they need those games to do really well. I have no idea what they spent on them, which would, of course, dictate how much, you know, their expectations are. So it'll be interesting if you care about, you know, just, I don't know, the sort of business side of things, the health of Square Enix and whatnot, how this all shakes out next year.
No, good thing to bring up, because this year they're closing out basically. I don't want to say closing out because it goes into, you know, January, February, March. Does Square Enix have any releases Q1 next calendar year, or is it really kind Evercore, of Residence?
Evercore, FF14 expansion.
Yeah, no, good. No, yeah, blind spot for me. No, good call out. So I think that covers it for Final Fantasy VII Revelation and Final Fantasy Resonance.
Just one more thing with the Resonance. I wrote up this comparison for the demo because I was curious to see if they actually fixed the Switch 2 version, because like every HD 2D game on Switch 2 is always, it's good, but it's like if you have another platform, maybe play it there. This one's good. Like, just play it here if you want. It's no complaints. Like, nothing major. It was fun. I was enjoying myself playing it. It seems very well optimized in general. Only thing is, like, I spoke to you about this before we started recording. You can't disable the depth of field yet. Hopefully they add that in the full game, or there's a mod. And very impressed with it after, like, how Adventures of Elliot was, like, super demanding compared to this. So I'm happy that this actually, like, looks and runs good on even on portables. So yeah, download the demo and give it a shot for sure.
We did get a new trailer for the upcoming Monster Hunter Wilds Ascendance. It's got a lot of story focus, but then it also shows a lot of the different dragons. I guess Elder Dragons is not the incorrect term that you fight here. So there's two I want to hone in on here. And James might have to be the expert to bail me out. One of the dragons was like one of the original ones from the original Monster Hunter, like the guy that stands on two legs. Like, what's he called?
Yeah,
so I saw
the raid stuff, right? That's what they called it. Or it was in, wasn't it in 4U and GU also?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it was super boring
to
do that stuff.
Almost every game, like, it was in, like, obviously the original one was in, like, 2. I remember fighting it in Freedom Unite on PSP. I don't think it was in 3 Ultimate or, like, Portable. It might have been in Portable 3rd now that I think about it. I don't know. But
3 is, like, a big blind spot for me, because I never owned a Wii. I do not care about, like, emulating that stuff, because the controls always piss me off. I did play a bit of 3U, but then the 3DS version was local only, no online, so that got dropped. So that's, like, a big blind spot for me. But, yeah, like, the Lao Shan Long.
I bought a Wii for Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate.
I buy consoles for a lot of stuff and multiple consoles, but yeah, the Wii and Wii U were just no for me. So yeah, and they showed Kushala Daura, and like everyone's like, oh wow, Elder Dragons are back, and I'm like, not this dog shit again. Like, you should have.
Well, actually, speaking of that, first of all, the trailer ends with like a serpentine lightning based dragon, almost looks like Metal Seadramon or something like that. Is that a new one or is that a returning one?
Yes, it's a new one. New? They showed 2 new monsters in this. I forgot the names already. I'll probably remember it like maybe a year from now when we're talking about like Ascendance updates or whatever. But yeah, both a giant dragon. I'm looking at to see if they posted about
Gundoraja.
Yeah, there's 2 of them. One which looked like some old monster, which is Araketa, which looked like some old monster. But yeah, the one you mentioned is the whatever. I forgot the name.
I like the some of the comments on the YouTube video. Like, one of the characters says, "Watch out, that one bends storms to its will." And then someone like referenced the Jimmy Neutron meme, where it's just like, "Capcom, this is the third time you've brought a dragon that bends storms to its will." I mean, Kushal Devar is one of them.
I just saw that. I saw the lightning, whatever the thing, and I was like, if they bring Ibushi and Narva to this game, I will destroy Capcom. But we'll see what happens.
Ibushi was like the final dragon in Sunbreak, right?
No. What happened is Rise 1.0 before like May or whatever, like when it came out in March for the fiscal year and it was incomplete, you just had Ibushi as the wind, whatever, the wind serpent. You did that stupid rampage, remember, when you had to like grind rampages for parts?
Yeah, rampage.
And then Narva, you had like one third of the fight where you just got it down to some health and it just fell into the hole. What is it, like Arceus or like big
hole? Narva was the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Narva, you had like one third the fight over there, and then you finally fought it as All Mother Narva or something when it was complete, and that's it. Like that was the when Kakashi Rise finished and bails you out.
And then Capcom has also been releasing these little weapon focused things about the new gameplay systems called the Boost Bracer, like hunting actions. I have not gone into detail for each of these, but they have a little minute-long trailer for each weapon saying, like, here's the new boost actions available with Ascendance.
I don't know if Mikhail and I are on the same page on this one, but it definitely gives the vibe where it's like, instead of trying to salvage this as a true follow-up to World, they're like, fuck it, we're turning into Rise. And honestly, that was probably the easiest way to not so much fix the game's problems, but rather, if you can't easily fix it, lean into that. That's fine.
Yeah, I agree that this is not quote unquote grounded. They're going for the over the top stuff. I don't have a problem with that, to be clear. Like I have this. Some people think I really dislike the portable teams games when I literally have like 5 copies of GU. So like people should shut the fuck up. But yeah, like this is not World Iceborne. This is gonna become its own thing. I'm okay with whatever they do. I'm going to play it, like, obviously. Like, there's no Monster Hunter game
I've not played
for, like, at least 100, 200 hours.
Yeah.
I want to see if they actually fix the, like, a lot of the other issues. Like, I'll tell you my two biggest issues with Wilds. Like, a lot of people bring up the performance as if, like, the console versions aren't, like, the best a Monster Hunter has ever run on its target console ever. Like, I think people forgot how games run before, but if they get rid of the Uber stuff, which completely like kills the whole point of like exploring, and if they get rid of the, you know, the they had this games as a service type bullshit where if you highlighted the monster on the field, it told you if you do it now, you'll get its orb or you'll get its mantle or whatever. That killed the whole grinding thing. If they can sort out those two things, I would be okay with what they do, but we need to see what they do. I mean, they've salvaged us from like much worse. Like, do you remember what happened with Rise, right? Like, you and I have played that pre-release, post-release, and on everything else. And Sunbreak finally, like, got it to an actual good game. So, I'm sure they can do it, but it remains to be seen how much they actually do. And they're supposed to still bring this to Switch 2 at some point.
Forgot about the Switch 2. They announced it for Switch 2?
Yeah, they announced the base game. I assume we'll see it in the Direct because, like, Nintendo and Capcom do a lot of stuff together. But the problem with them doing it there is when they did Rise on PlayStation and Xbox, they could, and PC also, there was no crossplay or anything, so they could just update those whenever they felt like. Now you have to update it in line with the other platforms, so they're gonna have to like ship it with all the updates ready because crossplay has to be a thing. So I wonder if it'll actually be out this financial year, depending on when Ascendance is coming out.
I would not be shocked if they just drop a demo for the Switch 2 version with that Direct next week, which would annoy me because obviously it would annoy me for reasons, but I wouldn't be shocked if that happens.
Few other trailers and announcements from the State of Play that were RPG related. Crimson Desert continues to get a lot of updates and now explicitly has a new DLC announcement called Charting the Unknown. It is releasing in just over a month on October 15th. Now, I have not played Crimson Desert to be able to speak to what was shown in this trailer, but I guess I'm also not surprised because the team over at Pearl Abyss has been like relentlessly tweaking this game. So the fact that they have a new expansion pack or DLC pack ready to go, I'm like, yep, that checks out. Has anyone here played through Crimson Desert? I know Josh has. I forget if anyone else here has. Not yet.
No, Scott. I played it for a few hours. And then yeah, Scott did. And then they kept updating it. So I was like, I'll play it after they stop updating it, and that might never happen.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. They showed like a lot of like swimming features here, like grabbing onto like sharks and stuff and like having like underwater jetpacks. Like I'm like, is that in the base game? Or like running across the water? Like I don't know like what's in this game yet and what's new. But there's a lot of systems at play here. So this just seems like people who are fans of this game have a lot to look forward to. So it's on my list eventually. Rev Noir, this is the new Konami JRPG that was first shown off, I think, at like a January state of play. Being developed by Ilka, who I associate with like some Pokemon remasters or remakes, and I think they've worked on a few other IPs that are slipping my mind at the moment.
One Piece Odyssey.
Oh right, I forgot about that one. But so we got the second trailer for this JRPG. This is the one where there's like, what do they call it? Like the Star Rain. What is it? There's Evil Rain that
we call it Lightfall.
That's it. That like poisons people that it lands on. It's hard to make a judgment call because it's a lot of like story scenes kind of out of context about different characters and what they're fighting for. Animation looks very much like a modern Tales game to me. There's a few hints in the trailer for some gameplay systems. Like they have like this weird like Tetris sort of mapping system that they showed there, like how gear is slotted or how traits are slotted in some way. I have not slowed down the trailer to like really interrogate it, but I'm sure people could go frame by frame to figure out how some of these systems work, but they haven't really had a formal gameplay trailer here. I think it looks pretty neat, but go ahead.
I was going to say, if you want more information about this game, you just got to go to the official Konami site of it on Japan. It has like way better information than watching the trailer, in my opinion. It tells you who these characters are and, you know, kind of a little bit better information, but not like all. Everything's there. I mean, but yeah, I would say that.
My mindset right now is just, it's cool to see a new JRPG IP. Like, and from Konami of all people, like I'm kind of rooting for it just so that there's a new, like something that's not just a, you know, I'm actually, entry number 20 of a long running series.
I'm actually like really hyped to try this, really. Actually, I like the music that they use in like all the trailers so far. I don't know who the music composer is, but I feel like it's like Kenji Ito for some reason, but who knows? They never say who it is. So, but yeah, I'm actually wanting to try this. People are not really too positive. If you read like the Japanese comments, like watching YouTube videos, they'll be like, oh, is this a PS2 game? Oh, you know, it's like they don't seem too hype about it. So it's just like, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't look like, you know, it's not the best looking game in the world, but I think it still looks fine. And it's the trailer, like that's interesting. I don't know where people's like performance benchmarks in their heads are. Like to me, it runs at a good frame rate. The art style is pretty distinct. I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic, even though that term's a bit overused. I think this game.
My only issue is like the voice delivery, and it could be the trailers.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I watched the trailers muted.
I watched the trailers in Japanese. It's like light and day watching like the difference.
I believe it. Yeah.
Like when I watched like the English trailer, I was not hyped. It's like, but I watched the Japanese trailer, I was like, hey, damn, this sounds good. Like totally different.
And I think I buried the lead. It's slated for 2027, so at some point next year, Xbox, PS5, and Steam. Echoes of Einrad, the Sword Art Online game that released earlier this summer, is going to get a DLC called Genesis Maidens. In winter, looks like before the end of the year, so December, I guess that means. The main highlight of this DLC will be the addition of Misumi Mito Toaza from the Sword Art Online Progressive subseries. That means not very much to me, but...
Isn't that pretty much what these... I know a little bit of Sword Art Online, and like, that seems like what the DLCs tend to be. It's just like, here's a character from one of the properties. Hooray!
Yeah. Remember this character? They're recruitable now. So, and then lastly, we got a new look in at the upcoming Dragon Quest Monsters game, Dragon Quest Monsters The Withered World, which is releasing in December. So this showed off a few things. Like a monster wrangler, like Colosseum mode. It showed off like monster fusion. To me, I kind of looked at it. I'm like, yep, that's a Dragon Quest Monsters game. Not that I've played too many of them, but I've played the recent one, which is the Dark Prince. And then I played at least one more on a handheld. I forget which one. But it's kind of a known property. If you like the idea of a new Dragon Quest Monsters game, I think it has a pretty, you know, pleasing art style. There's like a slime that I'm not familiar with. It's like a king green slime that's like drooling. That it showed in the trailer. I'm like, I don't know who that is, but he's my friend. He's my friend now. So I'm hoping that my plate is clear in December to play through this, because Dragon Quest Monsters games are always kind of little cozy comfort foods for me. I think that's it from the state of play that was RPG related, at least all the headlines I had here. Was there any other big thing from the state of play that wasn't explicitly RPG related that we had any comments on? I'm trying to think like what else they showed.
The Ghost of Yote expansion they showed.
Oh, right.
I got me to, like, I need to finish that because, like, it just released when I was busy with other stuff. And they had Fairo's Eye in the Japanese stream. I think I butchered her name, but I love her voice in, like, a lot of games. So they had her talking about her role in it. So that was good. I think the one last thing to talk about in the state of play is they had the state of play, and then they had the state of play Japanese thing following it with like a Japanese host and stuff. They did this weird thing where they were referencing games from one stream and the other, and I felt like that completely like defeated the purpose of having it that way. Like they showed like a 1 minute trailer here and they said you'll have more of it there, and then in the Japanese state of play they said, oh, by the way, we showed this in the previous state of play. I think that was just very
I didn't watch the Japanese one, but they did say like stay tuned to the state of play Japan right after this. I'm like, that's an interesting way to
just like, yeah, just like have the stuff over there. Like, if they wanted to do a separate thing for Japan, do it like Nintendo, where you literally just have both events happening at the same time. People who want to watch the Japanese one can have different games over there. But yeah, I just thought that was weird. But yeah, that Ghost of Yote, the complete edition and the expansion coming out first week of October. So when I finish Ace Combat 8 and Ace Combat 0, actually more excited to play Ace Combat 0 than 8. So when I finish that, I'm definitely going to get to this. So that was the only non-RPG thing they... And I guess Wolverine, which I've not decided if I'm playing that this month or not. That and Fire Emblem are like the big question marks for do I have time to play them this month or not.
Fire Emblem, I'm going to play. I make no guarantees to myself whether or not I'm even going to finish that before the year is out. It just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Konami also did, I think they debuted this, the Rhapsody in Scarlet kind of original IP action adventure game. So that got its debut trailer at the state of play. So cool to see Konami back in kind of a, I don't know about a big way, but in a pretty big way. Then one of the other news things I saw here, this completely missed me by. I did not even realize this had happened until I was putting together the podcast outline and I saw the headline on RPGsite.net because I have it bookmarked. Digimon Story Time Stranger is going to get a expansion called A Hero's Eternal Legacy, slated for sometime next year. It's going to have its own protagonist. It's going to take place 3 years after the events of the original game. It's going to add like 50 more Digimon. Like, I just completely missed this, but it was announced by Bandai for next year. So I really like Digimon Story Time Stranger a lot. So I'm like, sure, I'll boot it back up next year if they add a big, you know, meaty little expansion pack to it.
I wonder what the actual, like, scope of this is going to be, because the easy comparison would be, like, Cyber Sleuth Hacker's Memory, where that was its own, like, story, even if it obviously
like
reused
it. It was, like, standalone, right?
Yeah. Wonder if this is going for a similar sort of vibe.
Let's see, a few other trailers and news here. That was most of it, because the state of play basically kind of sucked the oxygen out of the week for everything else. But there was a few other things that were kind of alongside that. Dungeons of Dusk. This is like the blobber from New Blood, taking place in the Dusk universe. They showed off a gameplay video this week. Like, so 15 minutes of footage there. Mikhail, did you dig into this one at all?
So, I mean, like, the weird thing is, so if you remember, I interviewed Dave Oshry about this, I think it was in 2024.
A while back, yeah.
Yeah, so at that time when I was doing the interview, I was like, can you send me a build of the game so I can just play some of it and prep? And he just, like, sent me the whole game at that time. But it wasn't, like, a completed build, so it was, like, this very, very, very early thing. So I've actually been like seeing some of this stuff before. It's been like not this specific thing, but some of the stuff before has been revealed, and I'm kind of like blown away by the game itself with in like how much meat they've put into it. Like, have you, for reference, have you seen this, the skill tree which this game has?
I don't think so.
Okay, I need to pull this up, because like,
while you're pulling that up, just to clarify, you interviewed Dave Oshry earlier this year in February. Is that what you're referring to?
Was that this year? Or was that
last
year?
Yeah, but you said like 2024. Like, I'm like, that was not 2 years ago.
No. So maybe. So the reason I said that is because I've actually interviewed him before, so I just confused it with that one.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that was this year. Man, that's insane. I thought it was last year. But yeah, so this, okay, I can't find the exact skill tree thing, but it kind of has like, not as bad, but it's kind of like Path of Exile. It has like this huge like set of nodes and stuff or whatever. So just surprised at how much meat they're putting onto this. But then the devs who are actually doing the 68K studios, they've made a lot of these games. So and if you've not played Dusk itself has like stuff you can unlock when you play it, so it's not just the campaign. So it's kind of cool that they are bringing a lot of Dusk's unlockable and Dusk mechanics to this beyond just the aesthetic and music. So very excited to play this when it's actually released. And they actually are going to release it on mobile also, and have this portrait version, because they want it to be for flip phones for people who have those. Like, they have this weird thing about that. So I'm like waiting to play that. I have the build, which I've like not played much recently, but I hope it actually ships this year, because New Blood is like known to, they're like the Miyamoto thing. That I can bring up though. Let me get that. Because that became this big thing on, that was from my 2024 interview, which was on Touch Arcade with Dave Oshry, where he quoted Miyamoto and like he did this kind of shit post about it. And then it became this huge thing on social media, where like people were quoting and editing his face onto Miyamoto and stuff. I'm just going to post that in our chat. Yeah, so that was basically what it was about. I confused the RPG Side interview with him from earlier this year with that one from 2024. So yeah, that's what happened. Getting old.
In terms of games getting updates, you already kind of talked about Dragon's Dogma 2 got its major title update ahead of its DLC or its Dark Arisen expansion later in the year. And we already talked about how it seems to be a pretty major overhaul, especially for on a performance front. Though they did add some adjustments that are a little bit more questionable, essentially like a cure for Dragon's Plague, more fairy stones, pawn adjustments, things like that. So I haven't really interrogated like the entire, like the change list is actually pretty quite long, and a lot of it is focused around like skill balance.
I will say that even though I don't like the idea of like the fairy stone changes in particular, I do think from what I've played that the DLC areas you can't exactly walk to, in which case you kind of need to just add in more or have the eternal fairy stone. We'll see.
We got a sales update for Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty. It has sold over 15 million copies. I think not really a surprise. We know that the game's done really well. I think the base Cyberpunk is over like 35 million or 40 million at this point. So that hit a new benchmark. And for upcoming dates, it's a busy month, as we know. We've already talked about other things in this month. I won't restate them. But new things have already also dotted the calendar. So Within this next week, there's going to be another Level 5 Vision 2026 presentation that they're calling Dream. So Level 5, maybe we'll finally hear more about Deca Police. That's kind of like a big question mark. But, you know, Level 5 kind of had a big year last year and maybe a quieter year this year. But they've also got that, like, Inazuma 11 remake.
I'm looking right into the future. I'm, like, looking directly ahead. They're going to announce a delay for Professor Layden.
Probably. Oh my God. We got Snack World Reloaded and a few other things too. So that'll be like literally within a few days of recording. Capcom already talked about kind of their spotlights and plans, typically kind of centered around Tokyo Game Show. So they kind of gave some details about what their booth is going to look like and some of their demo details that'll be available at the show. But then they're also going to have an online showcase that they're calling their Tokyo Game Show 2026 online showcase, set for in a little over a week, September 16th. So there we go. The games they're featuring at TGS are Monster Hunter Wild Descendants, Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen, and then Pragmata, they have listed as being shown at TGS, so I thought that's kind of interesting. So I'm not sure what that means, but we'll keep an eye on that, and a few others.
They need to show off the new Mega Man-inspired costumes.
There you go. A few other release dates here. So Nighthawks, this is a game that was kickstarted back in like 2018. It's like a dialogue-based I'm actually not sure. Like I was looking at the kind of screenshots we have for this. Kind of Disco Elysium like, but not. I don't know how to describe this. So I'm stammering here a little bit. I don't know much about this game other than it was kind of one of those like development hell issues where I had known that it got kickstarted, you know, 6 years ago at this point, more than 6 years ago at this point. I wasn't sure if it was ever going to release. It was still slated for 2026 up to this point. And we were like, I was actually talking to Adam, like, is it going to release this year? I don't know, but it's launching on September 22nd. So I guess they just call it an adventure RPG.
Well, I remember at the time it was announced forever ago, that developer, Why Did I Games, was mainly known for like narrative adventure games. And I actually remember when it was sort of kickstarted, people were like, who know this developer, were like, why are you making an RPG? That's not what you do. Because that's a whole different ballpark. But so that's why it may look more like an adventure text-based narrative game. And also probably maybe why it took so long to make, because it was kind of out of their, comfort zone. That's what I remember from it.
Yeah, they're publishing it. I don't know how involved they are in the dev side of it. But yeah, like Vajitai stuff, they've published a lot of stuff I've enjoyed. Like Techno Babylon's like my favorite thing they've done. So I will probably give this a shot. Depends on like what's happening that week. I don't know. Might be playing Dragon's Dogma at that time. I don't know what's happening, but I definitely want to try this. Like Adam said, right? They do the point and click like 90s style stuff. So want to see how that blends in with the actual RPG side of things over here, besides just dialogue. And I like the art.
Yeah, the art is good. Warframe is going to get an update called the Iceblade of Naren on September 23rd. And then Warrior Cats, Clans of the Forest, is releasing in late October, on October 23rd. So, a couple little indie releases dotting out the final few months of the year. Well, not Warframe, but the other two. So that was a pretty busy news-focused podcast, but also a look in at The Blood of Dawnwalker, a little bit of Onimusha, but more to come on that later. We're staring down the barrel at a lot of big September releases, not the least of which are games like Fire Emblem Trails and Another Eden Begins. We'll have Josh and others back from PAX hopefully next week. We've already talked about James is going to step out to TGS. Kite and Junior will also be there, representing RPG Site and potentially showing up on other
Kite
sites.
Will be. Representing RPG Site. Junior's there unrelated.
Gotcha. So, but does, I guess Junior's there unrelated, but has contributed to RPG Site in the past. So there you go.
Yeah.
So it's going to stay busy. And I know I'm going to be playing through that Final Fantasy Resonance demo. I want to get into Blood of Dawnwalker. And then I'm trying to remember if I finished the trail. I haven't finished the trail second chapter demo because that's long. So many things going on. So we knew that this was coming. And then, we're already kind of got to have to start thinking about, we have through November, or the GTA 6 is not really in our purview, but it's going to be an interesting time of year to kind of see how that makes waves for the rest of the, you know, gaming space.
Around this time of year is generally, I can only speak for myself, but I assume it's a similar situation for everyone else. Around this time of year is when we have to start deciding, okay, what games coming out still and what games that we haven't played do we want to finish before game of the year season? Because of how long RPGs can be, it really becomes a question of, at this point, realistically, you can only play like 3, maybe 4 more RPGs before it's time to start thinking about game of the year.
Yep.
Without like absolutely cramming.
And there's almost like a little bit of math to it where it's just like, well, maybe I won't play Crimson Desert because other people already have. And they can speak to it at the end of the podcast. So I will play, I don't know, Moonlighter 2 instead because no one has and someone should, sort of thing. Like, I don't know.
We're also absolutely screwed because it's like, we got to play Fire Emblem, but that's like, considering how long Three Houses was, it's like, oh god.
Yep. Well, we're only 2 weeks away from the big Fire Emblem, you know, embargo up, and everything else, I guess, releasing on that same week of the month.
What do we think is going to be in the Nintendo Direct next week, besides Zelda?
Oh yeah, we have a Nintendo Direct. I didn't even think about. Oh, yeah, god damn it. Jesus. All right.
Do you think we'll get a bunch of? Do you think we'll get a bunch of Xenoblade Genesis, or is it too soon?
Too soon.
It's supposed to be coming out next year. I don't know.
Well, we finally get the Western publisher for Kyoto Xanadu, that was supposed to come out this summer in English.
Yeah. That's kind of a big mystery right now.
It feels so weird that I've played Village in the Shade for like a few hours and Kyoto Xanadu for a few hours, but both are not out in English, and one, no one even knows who's publishing it. Like, what a time. I don't even know what to say. Mm-hmm.
What if they announce a Xenosaga remaster? Not the right.
There's been rumors, and I have no idea how much meat is on that bone, but there's been a lot of rumors for that, so who knows what'll play out there.
But, if that'll be my bingo card for free subs or something.
So a lot of features up on RPG site this week, not, you know, including but not limited to Blood of Dawnwalker, Onimusha reviews, Guild Wars 3 preview, Switch 2 reviews for Onimusha and Wolong, Exodus preview and interview, Fahrenheit 213 interview, the Angeline Era interview with that publisher developer, Durante. I'm sure I missed a few, but all of that's off on the site. Go to rpgsite.net, hit articles, and you'll see all of that. Find us on social media, search for RPG Space Site. You should be able to see us. Join our Discord, discord.gg/RPGsite. If you listen to this podcast, leave us a like, leave us a rating, leave us a comment. We'd love to see those. We'll try to stay on top of all the gaming news in the RPG space throughout the month of September. So we'll be back next week, as always, with another episode of the TetraCast. So until you hear from us then, stay safe, take care, and we'll see you next week.